This is a Pinball News production.
My name is Richard, and I am a pinball collector, and I haven't bought a pinball for 180 days. So, but in 1952, a friend of our family, they had a swimming pool in San Jose, and there were only two swimming pools in all of San Jose. There was the Crummies Pool, which was the Food Machinery Corporation president, and there was the Boomers Pool, which were other entrepreneur friends, and they were friends of our family. And so in their pool house, where they had to change your clothes, they had pinball machines. And he would let us kids play them for free, but the regular people of his friends that were his age, he was about 6 or 7 years older than myself, and he would make them pay. Well, they had one machine called Formation, and it just didn't get very much attention. I found out later, but it was 1940, built in 1940. And so he said one day, do I want this machine? And I said, yes. And so we put it in the back of a 39 Buick and took the legs off. He showed me how to take the glass off and all. And I took it home, and I was 13 years old. And ever since then, whenever I saw a pinball machine that was kind of in the back of a garage or out in a field somewhere, then I would stop and see if we couldn't also pick up that machine. We lived in a fairly large house in San Jose that had a big basement and in the old section of town. So I'd just bring them home and get them downstairs. Even the big one-ball pinballs, if you've seen those with the big cases, I would take them all apart, take the head, the blade, you know, just every piece, and then slide them down the basement stairs and set them all back up again. It was a funny thing about those. If you ever have one, in the right front corner of the door, there is a cavity. And if the coin box overflows, that cavity gets full of nickels. And I had bought two of these pinball machines, and the other one I smashed to get for parts. It had been out in the rain. And it was just full of these nickels, buffalo head nickels and all these nickels in those corners. So if you ever run into one of those, be sure to look in the right front corner. From there, I aggressively started collecting pinball machines as soon as the fellows printed this book, which was probably in the 70s. But in between time, I picked up a few. A friend introduced me to someone who said, oh, he's a pinball collector. This was probably 1955. And he said, yes. And I said, well, how many pinball machines do you have? And he said, well, I have three. Well, I already had seven, so I was a pinball collector, too. I didn't even know it. But when this reference guide came out, then it became interesting to collect the find a Humpty Dumpty, the first one with flippers, and found at the first time that my pinball machine, my first one, Formation, was 1940. And so then it became a lot more exciting to accumulate it. And I would put ads in Hemmings Motor News. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, Hemmings Motor News. I would put ads in the Antique Trader and the Nicola Tune. Because I didn't, first of all, there weren't any real successful pinball magazines that came out. I think Steve Young told me you had to have 1,000 people to make the magazine roll. And otherwise it was, they tried a few, Phil in Oakland tried a few for amusement only, a couple of other people. However, it was better for me if I hung out with jukebox collectors and slot machine collectors because we would get their spin-offs. They didn't want the pinball machines. And the first time I got Humpty Dumpty, the guy had come from Virginia and left had a bunch of jukeboxes. And then he called me up and he said, I'll leave the truck in San Francisco at a certain place, a U-Haul, and I'll leave the key underneath the wheel. And so I drove down there, got the key under the wheel, came back up, and emptied out all the pinballs because he had enough room for like 10 jukeboxes, but that was all the operator had. So he filled the rest up with, and that's when I got my first Humpty Dumpty with a very bad glass like most of them did. Another person in our neighborhood here right in San Rafael by the name of Bob Collins decided early, I would guess in the early 70s, to start bringing in pinball machines from England. And then he became very old pinball machines. And then he became very interested in finding out the history of pinball machines. And he went to Chicago to the library, and he brought us the first publications that we ever had, which he would take photostatic copies. They were on microfilm, take photostatic copies, and then put them all together. And when I think I ended up paying him $200 for this set of paper here, but then I printed them all off for Russ Jensen. And that was our first little easy reference to getting the names of early pinball machines and a place that they go. It turns out that not all pinball machines were advertised in the Coin Age Journal or Billboard Magazine or all the other places. Those are the two that I can remember. Billboards still, there are people that collect just billboards because they have a lot to do with vaudeville and radio and television, but the backs of them were full of pinball ads. And just like when video games started, the pinball people were all over the place. And with building pinball machines, with a cabinet shop and a couple of pieces that you could get from a vendor, and you had a pinball machine to go. That's enough about me, I think. I'm trying to go on to a couple of things that I did want to bring just to show. And that was, this is one of my best tools that I use, and it's a tool that a glazer uses to somehow, I'm not sure how they use them, but they obviously gave them away free with the PPG paint company. And it's very, very soft on the end. So if you're cleaning a pinball, you can put a T-shirt on there and get under the skirts really, really easily. The other thing that I had forgotten, but I learned a new way to do it, was always handy to, on the old machines, especially the glass will drop down below the rides, the grooves that it rides in. And so you get a suction cup and you can pull it up. But I forgot the suction cup, and somebody rescued me here at the show today or yesterday. Just take tape, like duct tape, and just stick it on there, make a little T out of it, and it just comes right up, and you can pull it off. Another thing that I'm not sure if anyone else has ever seen this or done this, but it's been on newer machines for me to take a pair of these Chinese, so I don't use them for anything else, long needle-nose pliers. And if you have the bayonet type of light bulbs that are held down, the little center electrode, if they're underneath a place that you can't get to them easily, you can slide this into that electrode, the spring loaded down, and then kind of work it in, put a rubber band on it, and then it takes the pressure off of push and turn for the bayonet, and you can just slip them out, even with another pair of needle nose pliers, pull them out from underneath a lot of congested areas and slip in the new ones. But I don't recommend them for use because they don't last very long as far as Chinese. The early editions of pinball, as some of you know, started out electric using dry cells, 1.5 volts, and they usually had four of them, especially the payout pinballs that would have an electric motor or some kind of a device that would allow you to pay out the money. I guess as we all know here that all pinball before the invention of flippers was for gambling. There was no other reason. It was, I bet I can make a higher score than you. Here's $10. Or they'd have a posted list of candy they would give you, or drinks, or hot dogs, whatever it would be, if you had a high score. And so it evolved into the loss of slot machines, the regular one-arm bandits, into some areas by the city councils and things saying we don't want any more slot machines, to making a pinball machine that actually paid out and that came in money. The two machines that I brought over in the corner, they'll have hidden drawers in them, and so that the law wouldn't know that the money was actually coming out, and the proprietor could check the people in his store, and he would say, okay, yeah, it's okay, we can trust everyone that's here, and give them the money. But that's probably one of the things that gave pinball a bad reputation for a very long time until the invention of the flipper, and then we're all home free. One of the things that's easy to identify from this period, we're talking probably 1934 to 1940, maybe a little less, are the plungers or the ball lift. And when we have the two triangles, this is very typical of all the Bally machines during that period of time. We have one that's similar, but this is a Gottlieb that is from that same period of time, where when someone says, "Oh, I have a pinball," they call me and they say, "Well," I could ask them, "What does the?" They don't know who made it. What was the plunger like? We also have this is Pamco. Pamco had a separate plunger for that period of time. The Chicago Coin during that same time had a very poorly designed, made out of pot metal. And pot metal means anything you have in a pot that made the metal out of it. It could be lead, zinc, and some, especially on those early World Series, which I was glad to see that they, Rockola World Series, they make that, you know, he's doing that centerpiece for $200. Man, I went home last night, flashlight, and I counted, I have at least five World Series that I've bought over the years. I don't know if we do have at least 500 pinball machines, and what's going to happen to them? Because my kids or our kids don't want, you know, 500 pinball machines. So what we'll do, donate them to the museum, you know, over a period of time. And I think that's, thank you. That's where they really belong. And my hats are off to people that put their ducks in a row for this event and the whole circumstances of all the art people and industry people and everybody that have got together to make this happen. Because I had no idea what would happen to my pinball machine collection. I knew what happened to Harris automobile collection. And so, I'd rather, it'd be not easy to accumulate 500 pinball machines. Especially the old ones, as easily as you can. Now, eBay, old pinball machines, pre-flipper, no price. You know, you'll see them, unless they're in your backyard, they'll be $200 or less. The only difference is Roy Parker back glass. If it's a Roy Parker back glass, it's going to bring a better price, and maybe into the thousands, you know, $1,200. Doesn't matter if it works or not, just matters the condition. And to survive 50 years, you know, those glasses are unbelievable that they even survived. Which brings me to a funny point that says, in collecting pinball machines, sometimes the best machines that we find, that I found, excuse me, have been in the best condition, beautiful glass, beautiful play field. Everything has been nicely stored in somebody's downstairs basement with a heater, you know, that heats the house, and so temperature is nice. It's a dumb machine, an absolutely dumb machine. And it's just because the proprietor, if somebody said, "I would like to buy a pinball machine for my family or for my son or whatever," they're not going to sell him Medieval Madness. They're not going to sell him Funhouse. They're not going to sell him anything. At that period of time, they're going to sell him something that looks good and they want to get rid of. And the buyers didn't have any knowledge. All pinball was a pinball. It had no knowledge of the designers or anything. And I can remember for Niagara pinball, I'm sure Gordon showed a picture of Niagara. In San Francisco, Playland at the beach, they had three of them lined up all together, worn clear to the play field. There was no picture there at all. And they were still making money. People still lined up to play those machines, because they were just so great. And I'm sure that, I don't know exactly what happened to them, but I don't think they survived when they sold all that. I just think that somebody said, "Oh, these are junk," and threw them away. I'm just going to go back to Mills Novelty Company. Mills made slot machines, and then they got into the pinball business. And so two squares over top are Mills. And so when somebody calls, we could ask them that. This is the most common one that I have, and this is a little bit interesting story. When Rob Burke put on the first pinball show in 84 in Chicago, and my wife and I flew out, and I was talking to Harvey Heist, and Harvey was telling me how great it was, you know, the pinball show, people recognizing people that were just floating around the society. But he had designed this particular piece for the Genper Brothers Pinball. And he had designed this piece. And he was very proud of this part until United came out with a piece that did the same thing, that was nothing more than a piece of sheet metal. And for the ball lift, was it just a twist of a piece of sheet metal in a slot. And so he said, he put all the time and energy and effort into this nice proportionally piece, and then it was gone. There's a local artist here at the University of California at Davis, and years ago he painted this picture of these three pinball machines. It's very valuable painting, and somebody owns it in San Diego. Just recently, they've allowed them to make a postcard of this, and I cannot figure out why this person, who is probably, if I didn't tell you already, I'm 70, so he is probably maybe 75, maybe no much more, had these very, very vintage pinball machines as part of his tour or whatever, art, you know, what he drew. I just have no idea why, and he just called it three pinball, or four. The pins and the balls and the bagatelle, that's right, I forgot that part. And I guess most of us know that in France, in Bagatelle, France, they built the machines. Pinball and bowling and pool kind of all have the same roots, according to Dick Bichelle in his book, and he said that they were from the Romans rolling round stones down the sides of hills into pockets or holes and seeing who could get the right hole at the right time or whatever it might be. Then it evolved into bagatelle games, which we have a few out here, and then into coin-operated bagatelle that was patented by a fellow named Fromm in Youngstown, Ohio. And he built a machine called Wiffle Ball, and Wiffle Ball, he patented the coin-operated enclosed pinball machine. And so he spent the next 2 or 3 years going after all the infringements in that patent, and then he wasted all the money he had made. He made like 55,000 of them, and they're on eBay, and they don't bring a lot of money. The one that we would have had here is going to be at the show at the San Francisco International Airport, and so we have quite a few machines that are going to be showing in four different windows through Michael Sheets and everything he's able to put together. Unbelievably, this is going to be early pinball, then 50s and then 60s, and all in the clear up to medieval madness type new pinball machines. But most of my information has come from this book that was published. Most of you know, I think you can still get this book, and it has an awful, Dick Bichelle just put a lifetime worth of work into this pinball that helped establish our base for where we're going.
Richard, you chose a wonderful selection of historical machines out in the main hall. Can you describe why you chose each one? And a little bit about the machines, please.
Thank you. For the pinballs that we brought to the show today, Michael Sheets hooked us up in the middle of winter with the daughter of the man who invented or started Pacific Amusement Company down in Los Angeles. And this daughter was about 85 years old or so, and he asked to bring these PAMCO machines to her, to the Lucky Juju. And so we went down there and saw her and met her, and she gave us stories. And then I went through my list of machines that I had that I didn't bring, and I came to the one called Skookie. And I said, she said, "What, you know why it's called Skookie?" And I said, "No, I have no idea why it's called Skookie." And she said that was her nickname when she was growing up. Now, if that hadn't happened, that would have been lost, I'm sure, to the whole series of events. And so Michael Sheets says, "Why don't we try to get as many PAMCO machines as we can here to the show?" So I brought a 4 or 5 or 6, I forget, that are very gambling-type machines. I can honestly say they are not as well-built as Bally machines were from that period of time. And if you look at them, the bounce back, where the ball comes back to go across the arch, is just it's ingenious, but it's not a nice casting. It's just a piece of wire spring for it to come back and forth. The glass, the back glass on galloping plugs and on red sails. Red sails, by the way, is topless girls on there, but it's smashed, and it came to me broken up. If I knew eBay was coming and if I knew Mr. Pinball was going to be here, I probably wouldn't have half of these machines. But every so often, like somebody would call me from a jukebox collector and say, well, we've got 42 machines, and blah, 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 read the names, what kind of condition, and generally they're pretty careful about. I said, okay, and I'd buy them, and it probably cost me $4,500 or $4,200, and then he was going to ship them out to me, and then by U-Haul with some friend. Well, the friend dropped out, so I had to call Beacons. $4,000 later, Beacons came, and this machine, the back glass was broken, but it was broken already ahead of time, but it's only window glass. It's not a nice, heavy, thick piece of glass. Whoops, which reminds me, one thing I did bring, and I did forget, I would like to show you before everything, when we were back in the early 70s, late 60s, what we did to make a pinball still be a pinball, and that is, we had a broken back glass, and so this is what we did just to survive before anybody reproduced any back glasses. We glued it all together, all the pieces, and sandwiched it between another piece of glass, and that's the only thing we could do. Well, there was just no other source. And then finally a fella did make a glass here in the East Bay of Dragonette. But it was so low quality that Gottlieb found out about it, and they made him tear them up because they couldn't be sold. Actually, it was done on plastic, which is a pretty good idea, I think. But now it's just amazing and wonderful that we can get back glasses. You know, it's just we talked and talked for years with Gordon Hassett and about doing some Humpty Dumpty because it was going to be the most significant thing. And then, you know, what would come first? And I forget how it came about, but anyway, we got some glasses made. And I know that I bought Slick Chicks for like $25 because the black glass was gone. And now I probably have 3 to 5 of them, and we can put glasses in them, and somebody can have a Slick Chick pinball for home. And that's, my opinion, a good machine. It's a good player. It's a lot of fun. But, okay, well, I'm glad I remembered that part. I don't know, any questions by Jordan? Of course.
I've been privileged to visit Silverball Ranch with you and Val, and it's a wonderful thing that you've done. And it's kind of an unfair question, but do you have 2 or 3 games among those hundreds that are your absolute personal favorites?
Well, when we originally built our house, the bottom of the house was built for pinballs where we turn on switches and all the lights come on and everything. They were full of electromechanical, Fireball, Captain Fantastic, and all of a few of those. And then my friend Steve Lazar right here, he taught me how to fix solid-state machines. Now we only have Bowling Queen and Flipper Parade. Everything else is solid-state. So if I was to say right now my favorite machine has to be Millie Madness. It just has to be. But if I could only keep one machine of everything I had, I'd keep Formation, my first machine. Out of the 50s, I would keep Niagara. You know, that Niagara is absolutely beautiful condition. But years ago, when we went to the show in 1984, Don Murphy sold me a new old stock Playfield for a Niagara pinball machine. And we haven't put it in yet, but for $60, I just worry about getting
all that paint school.
Yeah. I did teach auto shop in our local high school for 30 years, and I didn't have the students ever come to the house to see the pinball until after they graduated. And I wasn't real comfortable with that. But as far as early pinball, I really liked them. I liked the machines with the spring type bumpers. They don't have a lot of value. They take up a lot of space, and they just don't have a lot of value because there's nobody there to hand you a free drink or a free candy bar or whatever it might be. I'm a little bit short on time, but I just... Okay. You have a question?
You have a lot of the kind of off-brand wood rail arrows, you know, the ones that the exhibits and the Ginkgos and the Uniteds? Do you have a good
quite a few. Steve Young didn't keep United, so Steve Young sent them to me. So, yeah, all I had to do was pay shipping. I think it was $60. And he said, oh, yeah, you can get all these things. So we do have quite a few Uniteds. And at the time, and some of you have probably gone through that, when you start collecting, you buy everything you can. Well, for 50 years, I bought everything I could. So now I'm kind of slowing down. But you know, it didn't matter. Now I look at a United machine or a Ginkgo machine, or and I think, man, this isn't any comparison to the Gottlieb. There are a few Williams machines that are good machines, I think. And I think Gordon Hastings was Army Navy was one of them. It was a great machine. And those are wood rails out of the 50s, yeah. But and then in the early days, there were lots of pinball manufacturers, and some of them don't exist anymore. They were bought up by other people. Well, like Wiffle Ball, that kind of thing went out. We have one glass that I didn't bring, and we thought it was the only one we ever saw. But it's the first pinball machine I've ever seen with a reverse painted back glass or score instructions. And it's actually reverse painted, and no back at that time, but and it's pins and balls, that's all, no electricity, and it says Zipper, the name of the machine, Zipper. And Doc Gottlieb, somebody about 3 months ago called, and they said in San Francisco they had a Zipper as well, and I think it's the first one. And when they cut the silk screens, then they made one of the ends backwards, so we know they're all the same series. Which reminds me of when the first Pinball Expo in 1984, we were going to a pinball factory and the pinball as a tour, and I sat in the front seat next to George Melenton, and his daughter was there, and he was sitting there, and I said, gee, you know, thank you so much for the Dreamy as one of quite a few of his machines. And he says, oh, anybody can draw the picture. He says, it's those silk screen cutters that are the artists. And you know, there's a lot to that. I mean, how can you cut all those things exactly like the guy draws them? And so I always thought that was a real nice thing to get away, you know, a comfortable way to say thank you for all the good things, but you're welcome. Yeah. Any more questions? Some questions somewhere? Thank you.
So you purchased 500 pinball machines, and I think probably the first one you got was probably your favorite, but tell us maybe one that you really found yourself fortunate that you got, in your opinion.
I kind of like the Flipper Parade, the Attaball series of those. Flipper Parades are really another one out of the 50s or 60s is Bowling Queen. Bowling Queen, oh, impossible to get. And Mibs, the same thing. Those are really difficult machines to win on. You know, win would be ahead of. When we had Niagara, I paid $10 for Niagara, probably 1957. And I would not be surprised if we haven't played 40,000 games on that. I took it to every apartment place, every basement, every parties we'd take it to, and we'd play that thing all night and just one right up till it beat us. I mean, we were just so tired of playing it that we couldn't concentrate on winning. And I haven't tuned it up for years, and it still plays. But and we took the tilt off, so that helped. That helped keep us excited. But. Okay, I'm sorry it's so short. I'm just not, you know, I don't even know if my records would, my papers would have helped me. But if there's no more questions, oh, here we go.
Have you spent much time on restoration? Do you get into restoration of your games? I know you have a lot of games in South Clayton.
Yeah.
Last night.
Boy, that's a really, really nice question, because no. there's something wrong with my personality or something, because I take a machine apart, get to a certain point, and if I can't get the piece that makes it almost perfect, then I package it all up and put it away until I find that piece. And right now, I've taken apart a machine called Champion. There's a very similar one out here that somebody brought. And I need the playfield inkjetted like the fellows in Canada do. And so they said that I can scan it with a camera and do all this stuff. And after that, and it's a payout pinball from Bally. And it's one that if you want an extra ball, you can put an extra nickel in it. so that it has two coin slots. So it's got a lot of different attitude, but I just never quite get. I do like Medieval Madness and those. I take them all apart, polish them up, bring them up to code, and then put them back together. But to restore, I've never painted a cabinet, anything like that. But when I told that to Dick Bushell, I said, now all my machines are kind of like as found. And he said, oh, that's okay. Those are survivors. You know, that's what they call them. And I said, okay, you know. But how many set up of the 500? Probably 150. How many work? Maybe 20. You know, it just... I'm not going to spend my time fixing a pre-flipper pinball because I'd rather have flippers, you know, and there's only one of me. But once it gets, you know, transfer them to the museum, I think they'll be able to handle, you know, certain ones at certain periods of time. And when there's duplicates, then they can sell them and use the money for whatever goes on. And I think I'd be happy to see that happen. I just hope everything gets together exactly like they expect, and it seems like it will. Another question?
Do you have a back glass collection as well, then? You have lots of without the game?
I do, but I hesitate to say that because I don't hang them. Generally speaking, I don't hang them on the wall. I have one hanging on the wall that's a repro and those kind of things. But anybody know the Fun Terminal in downtown San Francisco? There was a Fun Terminal downtown where the bus station is. I put an ad in the San Francisco Chronicle one time, and it cost me $73 just some wanted pinball machines. And I didn't get but one response, and it was this guy Saul. And Saul had all these machines down at this Fun Terminal, and they had started in 1941, and they'd never had doors on it. It was open 24 hours a day underneath a big, tall building. And he had back glasses all the way around the top and of these old machines. So when I went down there to talk to him, he said, oh, yeah, you know, he had all these things. But he had kept all the machines in the basement. And so I said, okay, well, thank you. And I left him a card. 2 or 3 years later, they're going to tear down the Fun Terminal. So he calls and he says, I want you to have all these machines. Come down and look at them. And so I did. And then we had to climb up a 12-foot ladder and take down each one of those glasses and put them back eventually with the machines. But there were no real... There were ones from the war, like Victory and Girls Ahoy, Gone Fishing. And those were really the conversion machines out of that period of time. And they're pretty slick. But I think if somebody came to him and said, I want to buy a pinball, and he had a surplus, he would sell them like their Woodrail Gottliebs out of the 50s. So he didn't have a surplus of those. But I'm not real happy seeing back glasses hang on the wall. I mean, I wasn't in those days. I'd rather the back glass went with a machine, you know, and that's where it belonged, not just somebody. And we had a person, Bob Nelson by name, out of Wichita, Kansas, and he went all around the United States looking for jukeboxes. But when he found pinball machines, pull out the glass for $10 a piece, and he would buy all the glasses. So one day we found... probably a huge U-Haul van that full of the old machines. And the guy said, I'm taking them to the dump. He called me. And I said, don't take them to the dump. He was in Georgia. But he had sold the back glasses. And so one of the teachers at school, husband, was unemployed. So I said, here's a plane ticket. Here's a U-Haul ticket. You want to drive down there? I'll pay for everything but your time. And he said, I'm gone. And so he went down, loaded up all these cases and heads and legs and all that, and brought them back. But they all had the glasses missing. But at least they're parts. You know, when Pinball Museum needs parts, they'll be able to grab them. Okay, we have 10 minutes, but I don't think I have 10 minutes left. That's what somebody saved me here. But thank you.
Do you have schematics for all of the games?
No, but I made a big mistake. Especially the early pinball, the you know, from pre-40s, there weren't a lot of schematics out there. Some schematics were actually printed on the underside of the playfield, but there was a company in Maryland that was just liquidating all their assets, and I heard about them, so I asked them for flyers because people, I didn't have any books, and he said, you know, people say, I have Queen of Diamonds. Well, I don't know what it looks like. They don't know how it plays, so I said, I'll give you $5 a piece for all the flyers, and from the 50s, and three from the 60s, and two from the 70s, or something. And they sent me $200 or $300 worth of flyers. I made a mistake. I should have bought all the flyers. I think Rob Burke bought all the rest of them. But they also had 15 file cabinet drawers full of schematics. So I said, well, send me the schematics. And they said, okay, that'll be $1,500. I said, okay, send them. And they get here. But, you know, you can reproduce a schematic nowadays, and you can't reproduce a flyer. So it was a mistake from that part. But I do have schematics for 99% of the games. I think it's also quite interesting that some of the electronic people from the Silicon Valley are interested in the old bingo machines that have big cables in them that all the wires run through to do everything electromechanically instead of doing it with electronics. And there's been a little bit of stimulus, but generally speaking, bingo machines. Is there a bingo machine here? Bingo machines are not in high demand, and there are a lot of fun if you know their payout pinball type things. And there's Nevada had them, so they had hoppers in them. And so if you won five in a row or so, they'd pay you the money. But yes, schematics are pretty plentiful now. Okay, we'll let everybody go early, and my kids would be really happy from school. That was a chance, but thank you.